Okay. Before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. And it's a little bit complicated tonight because we're starting in the middle of a paragraph. So I'm going to go through first and tell you the page, and then I'll come back again for each edition and tell you what line. If you're in the Sparkly book, it's page 299. If you're in the second edition, it's page 256. If you're in the first edition, it's page 238. And if you're in the JCIM, it's page 126. Okay, let's go back. In the Sparkly book, it's page 299, the last full paragraph. The sentence begins with the word ownership, which is the sixth line from the end of the last full paragraph. In the second edition, it's page 256. It's easy here. Paragraph 10, line 10. First edition, page 238. It's the last full paragraph, the sixth line from the bottom. And in the JCIM, it's the first full paragraph, the fourth line. Again, the key word to look for is the word ownership. Okay, let's take just a few moments to be quiet together. Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. I know all of you are completely familiar with the idea that you come into this world with nothing, and you take nothing with you when you leave. You come into the world with nothing, you leave with nothing. It's like from dust to dust, from nothing to nothing. But, glory of glories, you have this opportunity, you believe. In the interim, to gather things, possessions, to get and to have. Not only that, but to get and to have that which is mutually agreed upon as having value, so that your accumulation constitutes your wealth, or what you imagine to be wealth. And how much you accumulate, and how much you have when you leave and take nothing with you, is a mark of your success, your worth, literally. This is such a strong belief that you believe that what you possess is your only worth, and is the only proof of your worth. It is a miserable idea. But it is one that is deeply ingrained and not easy to abandon. Now, we've been talking about the two worlds, and the fact that you cannot see two worlds at the same time. One precludes the possibility of seeing the other, and the other precludes the possibility of seeing the former. What I just described about entering the world with nothing and leaving it with nothing is the description of orphanhood. This is the one you need to abandon. Because it completely blocks from your view the real world, the truth about you, that it is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom, that the Father has withheld nothing of what he is from you. A state of being in which there is no lack of any sort. Now, it's an interesting thing. In orphan land, the other world, it is a state of mind of scarcity, which means that there isn't enough for everyone. And that's the reason for the struggle to possess, so that you can secure for yourself something that is meaningful and of value to you, that there isn't enough for everyone to have. And the means by which you secure a possession is through the idea or concept of ownership. The very word ownership truly is meaningless and needs to be seen as meaningless and needs to be invalidated, because you know what? You can't take that with you into the conscious experience of the other world or of reality. And this is a tough nut to crack. How would you behave? And I want you to think about this from time to time this week. How would you behave if you didn't own anything and you didn't need to own anything? How would you behave if everything you needed was yours? And then I want you to contemplate how you could transfer that experience, that way of being, into your daily lives here, in what you think is orphan land. Now, you may think this is going to take a tremendous stretch of your mind, one that it will be impossible, but it's not. And I am pointing you in the direction without giving you an explanation of what you will experience, because you have to feel for it yourself. And you have to begin to look at yourself and everything in your day as you go through your day, with a willingness to see it in a different way. And you need to ask me, or the Holy Spirit, or the Father, to help give you the new perspective. The fresh perspective. And don't be afraid of what you will find. You see, you're all afraid of loss. Loss of what? Loss of possessions. Even your good you think of as a possession. You are afraid of loss because your fundamental mindset says nothing is truly yours to begin with, and none of it will be truly yours to end with. Therefore, you must do something unnatural, at odds with this state of nothingness, so as to have substance yourself. Wealth, respect that comes from it, and so on. Now, are you the Christ? Now, are you each the direct expression of God, the current direct expression of God, in whom all that God is being embodied currently? As I've said many times, you are neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You are at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. And that's what we're talking about. Well, you're speaking in rather general, vague terms. Can't you be a little more specific? No. Because you have to want the new experience, and you have to want it enough to opt for it, to give your attention to the experience of it, and by doing that actually within yourself, setting aside the devotion and the commitment you have to your old mindset. I could tell you things, yes. I could tell you things, yes. But then you would think about what I told you. And I don't want you to think. I want you to let yourself into the void of not knowing. And pay attention. Listen. Innocently. Meaning, without preconceptions or expectations. At the beginning of the paragraph that we're going to start reading in, it says, "Your Father knoweth that you have need of nothing." Oh yeah, in the sweet by and by, that will be the truth. When I'm awake, that will be the truth. Well, wake up. Wake up here, now, today, tonight, this moment. It's the truth now. Don't distance yourself from it by saying, yeah, in the sweet by and by, after you die. Or when you're further down your spiritual path. You have to dare to start behaving and being conscious as though you truly are not behind the point of perfection, that you're at the point of perfection, and that you are capable of comprehending or understanding yourself from that point right here, right now. Where? In orphan land? No. In the kingdom of heaven that you're currently calling orphan land. And all I'm saying is, here is a way to stop reinforcing that where you are is orphan land. Pay attention this week to how much you value your possessions. How devoted you are to them, and how owned you are by them. You see, ownership. The things you own end up owning you, because as you serve them, because they are serving you by giving you validation and respectability, you lose sight of your capacity to love. It becomes more important to you to protect your possessions than it does to care about your brother, or to do the inner work necessary to cut through the definitions you have about your brother so that you might connect with what your brother truly is right there in front of you, in spite of your definitions. Oh, you see, I'm changing the subject slightly. I have a body. This is my body. I have blue eyes, good-looking blue eyes. I am this or that. I have a pleasant smile. And my body is nobody else's body. It's mine. Well, isn't that as silly as an ingot of gold saying, "Ah, this gold color is mine," as though it's a possession. Rather than an inherent quality that could never be absent for a moment without gold, the ingot of gold, ceasing to be gold. You don't have a body. That which you are, consciousness, mind, always has present that which identifies it. There's no choice. You can't possess what you are. You can't possess what is you. But since you think your body is your possession, you take great care to protect it, as though you could lose it. And I promise you that the moment anyone passes on, they find that they haven't lost their body. How can the visibility and tangibility of you be lost or possessed or in need of protection? Only if it isn't truly yours, but you must make it yours. Pure orphan mentality. Now, let's continue in the book. Ownership is a dangerous concept. And notice it used the word concept. It didn't say a dangerous thing. as though it were something actual. Ownership is a dangerous concept if it is left to you. The ego wants to have things for salvation, for possession is its law. Why is possession its law? Because without possession, it's nothing. From dust to dust. Possession proves that it is something according to its idiotic mindset. The ego wants to have things for salvation, for possession is its law. Possession for its own sake is the ego's fundamental creed. Possession, just for the sake of possession, is the ego's fundamental creed. A basic cornerstone in the churches that it builds unto itself. In the churches that it builds unto itself. And don't mistake and think it's talking about churches in the world. The ego turns the body into a temple of its own. You know, it sees it as a possession and it claims it. And at its altar, somewhere right in the center of what you call you, it demands you lay all of the things it bids you get, leaving you no joy in them. How does it do this, or how does this translate into human experience? It translates this way. You gain something. You gain possession of it. You get it. And then you establish ownership of it. And forevermore, you must protect yourself against its loss. And that's what insurance companies thrive on. And the fact that you believe that it still truly is not yours is what causes you to be sucked into buying insurance. And so, daily, as you gain possession of something, you also gain the inevitability of its loss, or the extreme likelihood of its loss, and you must do something to secure it further. The ego says, you will be happy with this, and you get it, and it says, lay it on the altar. It's not really yours. You can't really have it. You've got to protect it. And in protecting it, constantly remind yourself that you don't really have it. And so the joy of having it is never truly experienced. That's what that means. At its altar, it demands you lay all of the things it bids you get, leaving you no joy in them. So, you compensate. And you accumulate things. Things of value, and hopefully things of great value. And then, knowing that you will not be able to forever hold on to it, what do? You turn it into, in your mind, isn't this a great word? Into a legacy, which you can hand down to your offspring. Not just something that allows them, who were born with nothing and will die with nothing, a leg up, but also as a monument to the power that these accumulations give whoever owns them to do good in the world. You see? So built right into the fact that you can't really own anything forever. The miserable mindset is given a little bit of awesomeness by being provided with a larger purpose. And so the offspring not only seem to get a leg up in terms of possessions, they also find handed to them an obligation to do good in the world because they have the means to do it, whether they wanted it or not, which many of them experience as burden. And so the sense of accumulated wealth and of a legacy being handed on continues to be a miserable mindset. And I'm spelling it out clearly here for you so that you might more easily say, wow, yes. How come I didn't see that? Wow. How come I'm making myself so miserable because I think I don't have a portfolio or I don't have accumulated wealth? This misery is as invalid as the misery that accompanies apparently having wealth that you don't really have. I'm spelling it out so that you might say inside you that you have justification for exploring the other world, for abandoning orphan land, for abandoning isolation, self-sufficient independence. And join with your Father and with the Holy Spirit, which is nothing more than your right mind, so that you might begin to relate to your brother, not as fellow orphans, but as fellow Christs who have not an inheritance passed down out of the past, but a birthright that is a result of a current movement of God right where you are, in which all that God is being embodied for you to be consciously aware of. Right here, in what appears to be just the world, and which I keep reminding you is the kingdom of heaven. Everything that the ego tells you that you need will hurt you. Every carrot that the ego has you chase after will hurt you, because one way or another you will never really be able to get it. Even if you manage to get it for a moment, the ego would demand it from you and let you know that it is not yours, really. Everything that the ego tells you that you need will hurt you. For although the ego urges you again and again to get, it leaves you nothing. For what you get, it will demand of you. But what happens? Most of you say, well, okay, I accept the fact that I can't take it with me. And I accept the fact that even if I get it, I might lose it before I arrive at a point of dying where I can't take it with me. But I will narrow down my attention, and I will enjoy whatever brief span of time I have in possession of this. And I will simply hope that I have brief ownership of many things, so that while I give my specific attention to the having of them, I can feel good about it, and hopefully there will be enough short-lived happiness that I know isn't true happiness, so that I can manage to tolerate the time I have until I die and can't take anything with me. Not a happy thing to contemplate that I'm talking about. But I want you to see, that you are managing to gloss over misery. And you don't need to gloss over misery, because there is another way to look at this. There is another world. Right here. There is another way to see and be. Right here, right now, without dying. Again, everything that the ego tells you that you need will hurt you. For although the ego urges you again and again to get, it leaves you nothing. For what you get, it will demand of you. And even from the very hands that grasped it, meaning yours, it will be wrenched and hurled into the dust. Nobody likes to think about it. But there are people who accumulate things their whole life, treasures. Maybe not to exhibit great wealth, but to have in their possession things that they love. And one night their house catches fire, and it's gone. Where's the permanence? Did you have to die to not be able to take something with you into the next day? No. I'm saying, be willing to take a realistic look. The orphan's world is a miserable world today. And it's not your birthright to be experiencing everything that accompanies its perspective. If you will stop glossing over the miserable life and acknowledge it as it is, it will be so much easier for you to say to me, to the Christ, I wish to see and experience everything through your vision, which is your gift to me from the Father. In the honest sincerity of being willing to look squarely at misery and call it misery and not bother to gloss it over, you will find that the energy and the motivation and the ability to commit is there when you say, I want to see the real world. And what I'm experiencing now is not what I want to see. For although the ego urges you again and again to get, it leaves you nothing. For what you get, it will demand of you, and even from the very hands that grasped it, it will be wrenched and hurled into the dust. For where the ego sees salvation, it sees separation, and so you lose whatever you have gotten in its name. That's just the way it works in orphan land, in the illusion. Therefore, ask not of yourselves what you need, meaning you as the orphan you think you are, you as the isolated, separated, independent, autonomous entity that you think you are. Ask not of yourselves what you need, for you do not know. And your advice unto yourself will hurt you. For what you think you need will merely serve to tighten up your world against the light and render you unwilling to question the value that this world can really hold for you. And that's exactly what I'm intending and attempting to do tonight, is to cause you to be willing to question the value that this world, orphan land, separation, can really hold for you. If you're satisfied with it, there won't be any motivation, nothing in you, no desire to experience a sudden shift of perception. And that desire in you needs to be nurtured and nourished and illuminated and enlarged. Only the Holy Spirit, again, that which is nothing more than your right mind, only the Holy Spirit knows what you need, for He will give you all things that do not block the way to light. And what else could you need? What else could you need beside an unblocked way to the light, to awakening, to revelation, to realization, to coming back into your right mind? What else could you need? In time, He, the Holy Spirit, gives you all the things that you need have. In other words, while you're still not totally awake and clear, in time, He gives you all the things that you need have, and will renew them as long as you have need of them. He will take nothing from you as long as you have any need of it. And yet He knows that everything you need is temporary and will but last until you step aside from all your needs and learn that all of them have been fulfilled. In other words, they never were needs. You will arrive at a point where you will discover that what you thought you needed has always been permanently, eternally yours, inseparable from you. And all that kept you from experiencing it was that you thought you didn't have it. You thought it wasn't yours because you thought you were an orphan. You thought you had no connection to the eternal and the infinite. You thought you were just a puny, pissant little mortal. and you believed what you thought. Therefore, he, the Holy Spirit, has no investment in the things that he supplies, except to make certain that you will not use them on behalf of lingering in time. He knows that you are not at home there, and he wills no delay to wait upon your joyous homecoming. So even if you misinterpret what the Holy Spirit reveals to you, and you use it for delay, the Holy Spirit will not allow it. Leave then your needs to him. If you have a need, within yourself say, Holy Spirit, it's going to be really interesting to see how you unfold this, the fulfillment of this need, as my experience. And it's going to be even more interesting to find the fulfillment of needs that I didn't imagine that I had. Needs like peace of mind that doesn't hinge on events or circumstances or the behaviors of other people. The need to be able to abide unswervingly in an experience of true love, of real love, that isn't dependent upon circumstances or whether people have earned it. A love that is there imbuing everything you look at with what it is, in which you never feel vulnerable, threatened. It will really be interesting to experience the fulfillment of needs you didn't know you had. How about the need to simply never be in fear? You probably wouldn't think to ask for that, because you've learned to cope pretty damn well with life. But you have a need to never experience fear, because it is foreign to what you divinely and truly are. And therefore it has never abided in you. It has never really found a foothold in you. And you, right here in this lifetime, can live year after year without once experiencing fear. What comes to you of him comes safely, for he will ensure it never can become a dark spot, hidden in your mind and kept to hurt you. Under his guidance you will travel light and journey lightly, for his sight is ever on the journey's end, which is his goal. Now let's not get confused here. The Holy Spirit doesn't see the journey's end as somewhere down in the future. He sees the journey's end as the point of perfection that you're already at. The actuality of which it's his goal to uncover to you. So the journey's end is for you to see yourself as you already are, divinely. And that which is nothing more than your right mind is never confused about this, which is why you can dare to lean into it and give permission for it to guide you and yield to it 100%. God's Son is not a traveler through outer worlds. However holy his perception may become, no world outside himself holds his inheritance. Within himself, he has no needs. When you stop using your mind to partition conscious experience off into separate areas, giving those areas definitions of your own for your own ignorant purposes, you will find that your mind is infinite. I mean all-inclusive. That your mind is that in which all of creation is present to be experienced. You are whole within yourself in that sense. Within himself, yourself, he has no needs, for light needs nothing but to shine in peace, and from itself to let the rays extend in quiet to infinity. Illuminating infinity. As indivisible and inseparable from you, and therefore the whole of you. The kingdom that it's the Father's pleasure to give you all of. Now that's a very broad, grand idea. Something that there's no way to imagine embracing instantaneously. But you know what? You can turn your mind around, so to speak, by taking any object, as I've said before, anything that confronts you in your experience, and saying, I would like to see the more of what God is being right here than I'm seeing right now. And you can be looking squarely at a dandelion or a hummingbird or a fingernail, anything. You have to be willing to bring your attention to something other than the world you've been committed to, the mindset you've been committed to, the orphan land and the orphanage, and the sense of being an orphan yourself. You've got to bring your attention to something beyond that. Else there will not be a sudden shift of perception. There will not be the miracle. Whenever you are tempted to undertake a foolish journey that would lead away from light, remember what you really want and say, the Holy Spirit leads me unto Christ, and where else would I go? Oh, yeah, right. I got to go down to 4th Street and beat up Joe, who insulted my mother last night. Got to put him in his place. He'll never learn. Otherwise, the Holy Spirit leads me unto Christ. And where else would I go? Oh, I got to go down and close this deal today. It's going to add millions to my portfolio. And it's going to allow me to set up a program for my children and his and their children that will be the envy of all the wealthiest men in the world. The Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind, leads you unto Christ. And where else would you go? What it actually says is, the Holy Spirit leads me unto Christ, and where else would I go? What need have I but to awaken Him? What need do any of you really have except to wake up out of the dream, out of the orphanage, out of orphan land, out of a material world, into the sane, conscious experience of reality that is what you're misperceiving and calling the orphanage and orphans and orphan land and a material world? It's a matter of getting your priorities straight. Because once your priorities are straight, the energy in you will move toward that which has the highest priority effortlessly. You won't have to argue on behalf of moving in that direction. You always move in the direction that which has value for you, that which has meaning for you. It's natural, it's inevitable. Then, follow Him in joy, with faith that He will lead you safely through all dangers to your peace of mind that this world sets before you, that the orphan mindset sets before you. Kneel not before the altars to sacrifice, and seek not what you will surely lose. Content yourselves with what you will as surely keep, and be not restless, for you undertake a quiet journey to the peace of God, where He would have you be in quietness. And I'm going to add the word alive, where He would have you be alive in quietness, fully conscious, in quietness, in peace, in the absence of fear and anxiety, and even excitement, but not in the absence of awe. You could read this. Content yourselves with what you will as surely keep, and be not restless, for you undertake a quiet journey to the peace of God, where He would have you be in quietness. You could very well read that to mean, there you are, on a slab of marble, peaceful, quiet. And I'm going to say dead. Or peaceful, quiet, in a state of eternal bliss, in which there is no distinction of anything, where it's one infinite amorphous blob of light. But that's not creation. And that's not being alive to creation. So I do not want you to misconstrue what's being said here. We're talking about arriving at an experience of being alive in quietness, in peace. Standing in awe of the movement, the current movement of creation, in which everything is made new without apprehension, without reluctance, without reservation, without being on guard. To be present there in quietness means to be present there in full open consciousness. Truly alive. In me, you have already overcome every temptation that would hold you back. If I have done it, I have done it for you. If I have done it, it has been done for you. When I did it, the illusion collapsed, even though you're holding on to it. You don't have to do it from scratch. You don't have to do it over again. All you have to do is to be willing to acknowledge the possibility that it's already done, and therefore you are not bound like you think you are, and that the bondage can be abandoned now, at any point that you're willing to abandon it. We walk together on the way to quietness that is the gift of God. Remember that quietness means such peace that your mind is full open, embracing infinity without reluctance. The quietness here refers to an integrity of consciousness or mind. That constitutes invulnerability. The absence of anything that could pose or even suggest the existence of threat. Hold me dear, for what except your brothers can you need? We will restore to you the peace of mind that we must find together. The Holy Spirit, your right mind, will teach you to awaken unto us and to yourself. This is the only real need to be fulfilled in time. Salvation from the world lies only here. Salvation from the world you made up in the privacy of your solitary, isolated mind. Salvation from that lies only in the joining and letting someone else into your space. My peace I give you. Take it of me in glad exchange for all the world has offered but to take away. I have a gift for you. My vision, which God has given me to give to you. That is my purpose. Ask for my vision of me. Invite it. Take it of me, my peace, in glad exchange for all the world has offered but to take away, and we will spread it like a veil of light across the world's sad face. Orphan land, in which we hide our brothers from the world and it from them. See, the two worlds, one of isolation, one of union. We cannot sing redemption's hymn alone. Therefore, redemption will never be the result of a song you sing in the orphanage, or from the highest mountain peak in orphan land, all by yourself. You've tried it. You're trying it. It's not working. Try something new. We cannot sing redemption's hymn alone. My task is not completed until I have lifted every voice with mine, and yet it is not mine. For as it is my gift to you, so was it the Father's gift to me, given me through His Spirit. The sound of it will banish sorrow from the mind of God's most holy Son, where it cannot abide. Healing in time is needed, for joy cannot establish its eternal reign where sorrow dwells. You dwell not here, but in eternity. You travel but in dreams, while safe at home. You're neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You're at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. You travel but in dreams while safe at home. Give thanks to every part of you that you have taught how to remember you. Thus does the Son of God give thanks unto His Father for His purity. Now there something has been shared about the experience of the state of being when you're not in orphan land. And there's not a lot you can do with it, is there? Sounds nice, but what in the heck does it mean? So you see, in a way, it doesn't really do any good to express a vision of being awake before you've gone into the place within yourself where there is a willingness to turn your attention away from your current mental habits of isolation and miserable poverty, even if you're wealthy, to an act of joining, an act of invitation to the Christ or God or the Holy Spirit, and lean into that and be willing to yield into that. Yield into it, like falling into a net. Yield means abandoning self-directed, autonomous, authoritative thoughts or actions. Waking up is about re-establishing relationship where autonomy and independence had held reign before. This is very important. And although it is very important, it is at the same time very simple. So this week, I encourage every one of you, as frequently as you can remember to do it, to say this prayer. I wish to see and experience everything through your vision, capital V vision, which is your gift to me from God. That prayer is a unifying prayer, a joining and unifying prayer. And let that be more important than beating up Joe because he insulted your mother, or any of the other important things you think you have to do. Whatever you have to do, do it in the context of wanting to see and experience it through my vision, which is my gift to you from God. Then you will bring whatever that event is into the unity. And the relationship. Which undoes all of the elements of orphanhood. And all of the accompanying illusions. I do not mean to sound serious. But I am telling you the truth in a matter-of-fact way. Grounded in my experience of the truth of it that comes from letting the Father in and yielding to Him. And lastly, doing this will not lift you into some otherworldly experience. It will lift you into a transformed experience of everything you're already familiar with. You will have new eyes and new ears. And this is a promise. I look forward to being with you next week. And I love you all.